Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With us, a very special guest for the first time, Congresswoman Yvette Clark. She is from the 9th Congressional District for the Central Brooklyn community where she was raised. Congresswoman is the proud daughter of Jamaican immigrants and takes her passion for her Caribbean heritage to Congress, where she co-chairs the Congressional Caribbean Caucus and works to foster relationships between the United States and the Caribbean countries. Clark is a senior member of both House Energy and Commerce Committee and House Committee on Homeland Security. She also has been a member of the Congressional Black Caucus since 2007, and today chairs the Immigration Task Force. Congresswoman Clark has dedicated herself to continuing the legacy established by the late Honorable Shirley Chisholm, who was the first Black Congresswoman of Caribbean descent elected to Congress. In the 117th Congress, Congresswoman Clark introduced landmark legislation which passed the House, the Dream and Promise Act, that would give 2.5 million Dreamers temporary protected status and deferred enforcement departure receipts. Is a clear path to citizenship. Welcome to Reaching Out, Congresswoman Yvette Clark. Now, we've known each other for, I'm not going to say how many years, but you were Congress Councilwoman when we met, and I was a staff member working at 237. So we've often had lunches and we spoke about the future, and here you are. Welcome to Reaching Out.
So good to be with you, Greg. Thank you for having me.
There's been a lot of misinformation and disinformation about immigrants in our nation. Please discuss with us how lawmakers such as yourself try to combat falsehoods and conspiracy theories.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we've entered an era where access to social media platforms and the internet provide a pathway for those who want to deceive, for those who want to lie, to gain advantage and fear from the American people, to spread all manner of propaganda, misinformation, and disinformation. It's extraordinary that a nation that for centuries has been built upon the talent, expertise, the skill, the labor of immigrants would actually fall for these deceptive actions. And what I've done in Washington, because I knew that given the era, the technological era that we have entered, we didn't have enough guardrails against misinformation and disinformation, was introduce legislation to really protect the American people, the sanctity of our elections, and provide people with an understanding of whether, in fact, the information they've received is fictitious or if it's real. And one of those pieces of legislation that I introduced was the Real Political Ads Act. And that legislation would require a disclaimer put onto any ads that are particularly on the internet, with the claims of various candidates, to inform the people that it was fictitious, that it is made either generated by artificial intelligence or other manipulative tools, whether it's voice technology or other means of deceiving people. That legislation has been introduced but has not been taken up. And I get the impression that some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle see deceiving and lying to people as a viable means of gaining advantage over the American people, which is really a shame.
That's interesting, because no one cares about something until it happens to them. And one day the tables will be turned, and then they want to do something about it, because In the age of AI and all these deep fakes, it's not hard to manipulate our conversation and put words in our mouths, because I've seen it on Instagram where people are not really saying what they're saying, and it's a joke, and we know it's a joke, but they're putting words in people's mouths, and it seems funny, and it's harmless, but you do that to an elected official in a campaign, and you can really do some irreparable damage.
You know, the demonization, particularly of immigrants of color, has been a trope that we have had to deal with since, you know, enslaved Africans were brought to these shores. And we continue to see that, again, among a certain segment of our population in order to perpetuate white supremacy, in order to perpetuate racism and fear of people who may be different, of a different origin than others. And to stoke division among the American people, so that in that chaos, again, a more nefarious agenda can be pushed forward. And that's what we're battling against in this election cycle. And it's really a shame. It's been ratcheting up over, you know, the past 10 years, but we're seeing it at a record pace in this election cycle, particularly given the fact that my candidate for president, Vice President Kamala Harris, is a Black woman whose parents were immigrants to the United States.
You know, what's astonishing is, let's just say, in Ohio, where Haitian immigrants were accepted, and they have a legal right to be here. They went through the process. The community said, we want them, we need them, and they were given jobs. They were given jobs that needed to be filled. They were given jobs that no one else would take, and they are working in the community. Now, we only get this from the officials there, the mayor and the governor. The officials there said, we wanted them there, we needed them there, we allowed them to come here, and we welcome them. And then they have others come out and say that they're eating animals and pets, where one, no owner of any pet has come forward and said that this has happened. Two, the officials there say it's not happening. And yet they continued on that lie for about 2 weeks until they moved on to other lies. But now you hear nothing about that anymore because that damage is done, but now they moved on to other lies.
It's a consistent pattern. With particularly the Trump-Vance ticket to, again, demonize, dehumanize individuals an attempt to scare Americans into voting for them. And I don't believe that that's going to work. It's very clear that they have lied. J.D. Vance so much as admitted that in saying that they fabricated this story to for whatever means they did so. Exactly. Yeah. They decided to spread these lies. And so it's up to us to push back. The people of Springfield, Ohio, embrace the diversity of their town. This was a city in Ohio that had significantly lost population, that was, you know, basically reinvigorated. It's unfortunate that we're dealing with this type of manipulation of the American people, this type of attitude about humanity. But we have to fight back. And the best way of doing so is to make our voices heard during this election season and going out to vote.
How has this impacted the migrant communities, and what policies or actions have been put in place, like terms of voting and elections, emergency services, public education?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that we are very clear that these tactics can definitely do damage. And we have pushed back by exposing the lies and deception that have been put forth, though they continue to race bait, utilizing what has already been a debunked statement made by their campaigns. And, you know, the Department of Justice, the local officials are very aware of what this means in terms of our democracy and the destabilization of democracy. And I think, you know, honest people are stepping up to push back, to inform those who may be deceived by what they're hearing, by the fake information and imagery that's being put out. But we have, it's an ongoing battle. We have to continue in the same way that they continue to peddle in lies and deception. We have to continue to inform, educate, and bring truth to the forefront so that the American people have a real choice.
I know that healthcare is one of your priorities, without question. There have been inequities in healthcare impacting communities throughout our city and nation. What legislation have you introduced to make healthcare more equitable?
Well, you know, I have been on the Committee of Jurisdiction for Healthcare in our nation for over a decade now. And we have been very, very focused on undergirding the Affordable Care Act to make sure that our communities have access to health insurance and primary care. You know, coming out of the pandemic, we have seen the worst of what can happen when we don't have a strong infrastructure in place to address our communities, you know, health disparities. And so one of the things that I have been very focused on in terms of legislation are healthcare disparities that impact communities of color, bringing resources into our communities so that we can stand up a more robust infrastructure, funding for our federally qualified health institutions in our communities. These are local clinics that really address primary care for our folks who may not have a primary care physician. Introducing legislation around illnesses that are predominant in Black communities, from type 2 diabetes to uterine fibroids to menopause to maternal health. These are key indicators of communities that are struggling to address their health. And it's up to us in introducing legislation to get this across the finish line, to get these legislations passed into law. And I'm really excited about the opportunity in the next Congress to make real progress. Because unfortunately, right now, my party is in the minority. I'm a Democrat, a very proud Democrat. And unfortunately, we have colleagues on the other side of the aisle who still adhere to repeal of the Affordable Care Act. And if that is the baseline for being able to build upon a strong and robust healthcare infrastructure, you know, we need to settle that once and for all. In this election, we've already heard that, you know, Donald Trump wants to finally kill off the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, it's unbelievable. They haven't been able to do it while introducing legislation a number of times to try, but they understand, well, we understand that the people are reliant upon the Affordable Care Act to access health care. And so my hope is that this election season will bring us the majority we need to then advance the health care that our people need to finally, once and for all, close the gap, if not end these disparities of healthcare in communities of color, type 2 diabetes, being preventive, dealing with kidney care, which is a byproduct of type 2 diabetes and people going into kidney failure. Women who are of childbearing age, dealing with maternal mortality and infant mortality, which has been a longstanding disparity in the United States. And of course, just a whole host of conditions that we need to educate the public about, but connect them to physicians that can address their ailments and that can put them on the road to preventative care, which ultimately is the goal, to make sure that people are managing their health on an annual basis.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters, with us for the first time, a very special guest, Congresswoman Yvette Clark, and we're talking about issues that affect her congressional district. You said the Republicans want to eliminate the affordable health care. Do they have a plan in place to replace it with?
Well, I think you may have heard during one of our, well, the only presidential debate that we had with Vice President Kamala Harris and Donald Trump was that he has a concept of a plan. And they really have no plan. And that's been part of the challenge, that they wanted to supposedly repeal and replace, but they have no replacement. Because quite frankly, for so long in this country, we have allowed for you know, our healthcare infrastructure to eliminate so many people in our society from gaining access to health insurance and price gouging them with junk policies, where they go into debt just to be able to gain access to healthcare. We have solved that problem. And so it's very difficult to come up with a replacement other than what I call Medicare for all, that would ultimately solve the issue of health insurance for the people of the United States.
There's been some legislation that was just passed recently that helps seniors. Tell us about the $5 insulin, and tell us what that
absolutely
means for seniors.
We were very very astute as a Congress in working with the Biden-Harris administration to finally deal with you know, a real travesty. You know, there are treatments that are made available to the American people through their prescription policies. And for so long in the United States, we've been price gouged. Let's just call it what it is. You know, diabetes medication was skyrocketing. And we know that so many in our community, unfortunately, have this condition. Their insulin was off the charts. And for our seniors, just think about being on a fixed income and then having to choose whether to get your prescription for insulin or pay your rent. You know, it was untenable. And with negotiating through Medicare, which has the power of the aggregate to drive down prescription drug costs, was a no-brainer. We just couldn't get our colleagues on the other side of the aisle to recognize that. And so we were able to negotiate in legislation the reduction of the cost of insulin prescriptions for our senior population, which is a game changer in so many lives in our nation. And we look forward to a number of other commonly used prescriptions, you know, to be negotiated in the same way, and ultimately expanding the cost of the low cost of insulin to the greater population, so that no one has to go without life-saving therapies in order to just keep a roof over their heads or send their kids to school, whatever those interests may be economically. We know that it should not cost you know, thousands of dollars a year in order to access these life-saving medications. So I'm really proud of the Biden-Harris administration working with the Congress to get this done.
Now, tell us how this works. Who's considered a senior, And how do they access the $35 insulin?
Right, right. Well, they access it through their policies, and that the senior citizens are considered anyone 65 years and older. And so I would encourage folks to check with sort of their Medicare schedules to make sure that they are accessing, if this is a therapy that they require, insulin to make sure that their sugar intake is regulated.
Okay, all right.
Their glucose, excuse me, glucose.
Glucose. So Election Day was Tuesday, November 5th.
My constituents have been coming out in record numbers to vote, many of whom have contacted me to say that they have voted for me, and I'm just truly grateful. This is a labor of love for me, and to see that love return in terms of folks who have voted is a real privilege and an honor.
As I tell anyone who's running for office, if I don't know who's running against you, nobody else does either. So, and I really mean that. I don't know who's running against you. So that's a very good sign. So that being said, we have 30 seconds. Last thoughts.
Last thoughts. Well, first of all, let me just thank you so much, Greg, for having me on Reaching Out. I know that you are doing a great work and service to the Teamsters of your local and across this nation. And, you know, this is the time for organized labor. We didn't really get into it as much, but to have an administration that centers the working class, the middle class, as part of their agenda for moving our nation forward is a real blessing. We know that, fortunately, the folks on the other side of the aisle only believe in right to work, exploiting workers, and shareholder profits. We're moving into a new age, and I love to see the invigoration of the labor, organized labor movement, so that our children and our grandchildren understand the value of the sacrifice and of organizing together with their fellow workers to make sure that the conditions under which our folks work, the benefits that they receive for the work that they do, is passed on from generation to generation. It has been through your efforts that we actually have a middle class in the United States of America. So I want to express my gratitude and understand, and also state that I am standing shoulder to shoulder with you in this process, and that we hope to see federal legislation that makes it a lot easier, the PRO Act, to organize and to make sure that every working environment is one of safety, of human dignity, and one that rewards the work, the hard work of the people of our nation who are doing the work to make this nation the greatest nation in the world. So thank you so much once again, Greg, for having me. And I wish you all the best and much continued success in your leadership.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on Reaching Out. You've been listening to Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237, and a very special guest, Congresswoman Yvette Clark. Thank you once again for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.